Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Atom Big Cricket Podcast. Well, there's a catch here. We have rebranded ourselves and we will be called the Legends and Lads Cricket Podcast. Legends imply Vijay Lokapalli sir and Rakesh Rao sir, who are senior sports journalists, worked with in this industry for 35 to 40 years. And lads are the two teenage cricket enthusiasts, that is Krishna Maitreya and myself. I am Chirunandan Srinath. We have two absentees as we run up to this podcast episode. My two co-hosts, Maitreya and Vijay sir, haven't made themselves available for this episode. But we have an impact player substitution, and that is Rakesh sir, who's a impact host for this episode, and he'll continue coming to this podcast every now and then. So he has worked as a sports journalist and writer for 35 years almost. He's also a very dear friend of our Vijay sir, and he's making his second appearance on this podcast. Rakesh sir, welcome to the Legends and Lads Cricket Podcast. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine, but at the outset, let me thank you for giving me this opportunity to rejoin your show, and especially once you have rechristened it as Legends and Lads. And thank you so much for having people like, Vijay around, because me and Vijay, we go back a long way. Like you said that we, we've been in journalism for 35 years. I'll just correct it a bit. It's almost 40 years. I mean, for Vijay and me, Vijay has been around for a bit longer. He was my senior for many years. And I mean, as far as Vijay is concerned, we are family. So it's been like he's been my friend for about close to 38 years. And we have been colleague for more than 30 years.
But it looks like you have more gray hair than him.
Yeah, of course, because I haven't, I still have hair, so I'm eternally thankful to God.
Let's talk about this year's edition of IPL. And 21 matches have concluded. And as I look at the points table, we have Rajasthan Royals at the top with 4 out of 4 wins. Kolkata Knight Riders, 3 out of 3 wins. And LSG, 3 out of 4 matches. And at the bottom, we have MI, Delhi Capitals and Royal Challengers Bangalore. In advance all this, I'm obviously sad to see my favorite team, Royal Challengers Bangalore, at the 9th position. Rakesh sir, I wanted to ask you what is your favorite team, but then you replied me blankly on WhatsApp, saying that you don't have any favorite team. But whom do you think is a prospective winner of this year's IPL? I know predictions are not always correct, but they're exciting,
Yeah, see, for me, when the auction ended, when I was analyzing the teams there, which team got the best out of their shopping list? I thought Rajasthan Royals had probably the best side, the best pick. It's not the side that has performed well in the second half of the IPL quite regularly, but they went with a certain list, and I think they got most of the boxes ticked. So in my view, that was one of the teams that I was quite sure of. For me, even SRH is not such a bad side. SRH has the resources to go all the way. Chennai, you can never write them off. It's like each one contributes more than what you see as a sum total of, the sum total of each individual. If you just add up, it is much more than what appears to be that of the team. I mean, each one contributes a little more. Each one punches above their weight. So I think CSK is one team which I'll never rule out. MI looked to me, unless a certain player, a certain number of players continuously contribute, that's a very ordinary side for me, Mumbai Indians. And no wonder where they are. Delhi Capitals, another very ordinary side, I thought. And talking about your favorite team, if I were to pick Royal Challengers, Bangalore, they haven't sorted out their problems, for almost 10 years or more, because they have been going with top-heavy batting lineup, and they don't pay enough attention to their bowling resources. Yes. That's one of the reasons that is one team. Even if they decide to bat first and without the pressure of the scoreboard, even if they put 200 on the board, they can never be sure, because their bowlers are capable of conceding that one extra run, that is making it 2-0-1, and that proves to be the decisive difference. So that has happened so often now. So your favorite team, I know, Giroud, it hurts, but the point is that they still haven't got their act right. You can't just imagine that you can score 180, 190, 200 quite consistently, and probably one team that has scored in excess of 180 so consistently and lost. So that speaks of their bowling resources over a period of time. So you can't really sympathize with them unless you are their fan.
That was my next question to you, and then you answered so well, sir. Anyway, let's talk about the orange cap holders and purple cap holders. We have Virat Kohli, who's leading with 316 runs. And then from five matches, you have Yuzvendra Chahal with 8 wickets. And Virat even got 100 in the last match, but there was no support from the other batters and as well as the bowling. Jos Buttler got an amazing 100 and guided his side to victory. As you've already talked about RCB team, why don't you talk about why is that management giving more importance to this? As you said, heavyweight batters, Ben Maxwell now is out of form. Single-digit scores here and there, and then Favre doesn't look in good touch. And their bowlers are terrible, Alzar is also. And why don't they use Ferguson or someone like that?
See, the thing is that, some individuals or certain institutions, once you get into that mindset, if you start believing that, look, only batters are going to win you a cricket match. Because eventually it is not the... it is not the number of wickets that you take. It is the number of runs that you score. That decides the match. So once you get into that kind of a mindset, of course, one needs to learn, one needs to evolve. But there I see that, you went for Hasaranga by dumping Yuzvendra Chahal. How can you even think of that? Because a guy who has been part of the mix, who's been looking so solid, you just dump him. And especially if you recall the last match, it must have certainly hurt Bengaluru a little more to see Chahal doing that little bit extra, getting those wickets at the crucial times. And, because Yuzi was supposed to be an RCB man for so many years. and I'm sure even his heart beats for RCB. But then, of course, people who own the property, they have a different way of thinking. The people who decide on cricketing matters, they have a thing. So when you ask me, why is it that they are not paying much attention to the bowlers? It baffles me. Because at the end of the day, it is not entertainment. It's not charity. It is pure business. It makes commercial sense to have a winning combination. Obviously, if you ask anybody, he or she would say that, look, we want our team to win. We don't want just to score runs and not be among the top two teams, or at least being counted as one of the favorites, because they are the ones who played one final and then two finals, I guess, the first one, and thereafter, of course, we didn't see them anywhere. It's like they lost to SRH, I remember, in Bangalore. So their track record says that they've been performing well, they've been entertaining well, they have a very strong fan base, which are all factors which should spur the team to give their 200%. But if you don't have bowling resources, what do you do? That's as I have already said, that you can't just keep scoring 180, 190, 200 and expect to win unless you have at least 3 out of 5 bowlers who do their job consistently. Any 3 out of 5 should put their hand up and say, okay, we will either contain or we will get wickets. That doesn't happen with a team like RCB anymore. That day they scored 180, they lost. Last match they scored in excess of 180, they lost. And you expect Virat Kohli to, play a lone hand. See, what is happening is, imagine from one end, if Virat Kohli is giving you, say, 90 runs out of 60 balls that he faces. I'm just giving you an example. That's about 150 strike rate. 150 strike rate for an opener, yes, you can always argue that, look, he's not playing like a guy who's going to bat for 60 deliveries and give you 120 runs. No, we are looking at a person who is holding one end up. He's playing the anchor role. So for him, a strike rate of about 150 is not too bad. But what happens for the other 60 deliveries from the other end? You need people like you have Pfaff, you have Maxwell, you have Green. If you are going with at least three overseas, top order guys, batters, whom you expect to click, out of which if all three fail, or at least two of them fail pretty consistently, what do you do? I mean, you still need somebody to bat. And that Rajat, for me, he's lacking confidence. I think no matter you can still persist, you know that he's good. But confidence is a huge commodity in anyone's life. If that confidence is hit, then you know what happens. Now, for a team like RCB to have a person who is not confident, you have a guy like Maxwell who is not in form. So all these things will add up and it'll continue to hurt. And plus, of course, the constant being that you don't have you don't have number of good bowlers. So how many times do you expect Yadav and like DK to do the job which they did in a winning cause? So not necessarily easy. They have their own issues. They have limited opportunity, resources to pick from. And of course, as long as you have this kind of bowling, don't expect the team to go too far.
And they let go of Hazelwood, sir.
Yeah. So true.
Okay, talking about this year's IPL has also, opened up some surprises for us. Hardik Pandya was moved from Gujarat Titans to his former franchise, Mumbai Indians, and also was made the captain of the five-time champion team. What the fans believed was, how will it be if an Indian team captain is not the captain of a state franchise? This led to the fans booing at stadiums and booing at Hardik Pandya. And coincidentally and unfortunately, Mumbai Indians is not doing well. They are losing all their matches. And now, while as a mature fan, you're supposed to respect players, give them the importance, give them respect for what they have done for the country. What is your take and what is your advice to fans, sir?
Chiru, for me, I have a slightly different opinion on this. When we say fans, I mean, can you standardize the madness that the fans bring in? Can you say that you have to use your mind more than your heart? They're fans. Give them their right to express themselves no matter what. Across sports, across continents, you go and see people. I mean, any sport, any contact sport, like say football and some other sports, you see the fans getting involved. In India, it is cricket. Okay. Now, when people are investing so much emotionally into a team, it's a franchise. It's not a nation that is playing. Imagine every seat is taken. Every fan from the home side, be it Delhi, be it Calcutta, be it Bombay, people fill the stands for you. And most of them are fans of the local team. Okay. The only exception being every time a CSK plays, that's where you see a sea of yellow. But then that's an exception which proves the rule. The rule here is that, okay, if Mumbai Indians is playing, whether the team is led by Rohit, whether it is Hardik, whether Sky is available, not available, forget all those things. People will come wearing blue and they'll fill Wankhede Stadium. Now, that is part one, and they will be consistent and you have no issues with that. Now, when the fans collectively begin to take to social media, when they express their displeasure, remember, fans are not selecting the team. Fans are not, they cannot influence performances. They can only encourage the team that they support. Because a fan thinks from the heart. So if you say, no, you have to be mature. Now, what is maturity? Maturity, you expect a group of millions to be disciplined or to be on the same page? Probably not. That is not possible. You are looking at a very ideal situation. And if you go by that, imagine if the fans behave all over the world, if they are all sane and they are all civil at all times, you want to enjoy the field of sport. Let the fans be. You see fans doing crazy things. Anywhere in the world, you see ice hockey, you see NFL, you see, be it football, be it cricket. It's the fans that bring in a certain variety, a certain flavor to the things which is happening on the field. So let them be. Accept it. If they are booing you today, it just let them be. All it will take is one match-winning knock off from Hardik. It'll change everything. If the team is down, 4 wickets down for 32, and Hardik comes and plays a blinder, and MI reaches, say, something like 180, 190 realistically, and they contain the opposition, can you imagine how the same fans are going to rave Hardik? Because he has played a key role in getting the team those two important points. Now imagine Rohit and Hardik stitching a partnership, a match-winning partnership. What will the fans do? Are they going to cheer only Rohit? They're not going to do that. Fans, at the end of the day, want their team to win. And everything is happening because the team is not doing well. Let the same team win the next 4 matches and you will just stop hearing about this Hardik thing being, Hardik being booed. I mean, allow fans their space. And we are too quick to be judgmental. We judge everything very, very, very quickly. Now, of course, let's talk about the transition here. They just decided to ask Rohit to step down. And they installed Hardik as the new skipper of this thing. Obviously, this was something that was not expected. On the other hand, you see how CSK did the same. They also had a new captain. And that captain didn't have the stature of, say, a Hardik. But look at the smoothness of it all. Nobody is saying why Ruturaj is leading. And the team is not great either. But that's where I call that they handled it in a certain manner. That's where you need to give a lot of credit to CSK. Because that's been the team of, people call them a team of oldies, the dad's army, and so on and so forth. But the point is that they always maintained consistency. That is where you give a lot of credit to the management there. And of course, the presence of MS Dhoni and the respect that he commands. And that comes naturally to, I think, every player who plays under him. Now, when you look at Rohit, the way he leads MI is pretty different than what he does with the Indian team, which is natural. You know, leading a franchisee team is a lot different than leading the national side. But results are there. You can't blame Rohit's captaincy. But then the team, the team management must have thought that it's time to move on. Let's give Rohit a chance. Let him be understudy to Rohit, because Rohit is still there. Hardik to be an understudy of Rohit. And let him be there. You know, it's like, but then that is not happening. Although you still see Rohit, coming up with his ideas or whatever it is. But the point is, if the team is not winning, you don't see all these things. And Hardik knows where he stands. I don't think Hardik is anybody's fool to start believing that, he can manage it without the support of the team. And you will keep hearing these things that, that the team management is not really bothered about what's happening in the stands. They are focused on getting the job done. The players know their job. We are not too influenced by what is being said on social media and so on and so forth. This is exactly what we expected. And they're saying that. But if you are not winning, all these things will come to haunt you. So yesterday also, if you see, they won the match. MI isn't playing great cricket. They beat a team which I have maintained that's a very beatable side, Delhi Capitals. Mm-hmm. They scored in excess of 200. The last over, you saw 32 runs and the winning difference is 29 runs. Now, you know how important that last 6 deliveries of that over proved. But don't forget one thing. MI, even in a way, even though they won the match, they conceded 200 runs. They won by runs and not by wickets because they batted first, but still the opposition crossed 200. So if you go back and check after the 19th over, Delhi Capitals was 201 and Mumbai was 202. So very little to pick between the two sides. It's just that those 29 runs or the last over, the way, Nokia bowled, and they are also doing the same mistake that, they keep giving him the end overs where he's not going off pace. He's giving the batters the pace needed to hit him anywhere in the park. He's getting hit on both sides of the wicket. So Yesterday it was Shepherd's day, and that made the difference. And again, Mumbai Indians should thank Shepherd and DC for one huge reason, that in a T20 game, always remember, when the way you finish is very important. That means the way you, I mean, what kind of state of mind you have when you are going to the dugout at the mid innings break. Yesterday, that momentum swung decisively. 32 runs in one over is like getting 1.5 runs more every over in a 20-over game. That is the shift that it gets you from chasing anything that is, say 6 and over, you are jumping to 7.5 and over. And here it is in excess of 11 runs, almost 12 runs and over. So you move from, say, something like 10 runs and over, or say 10.5 to an over, to almost 12 and over. So that swing of 1.5 runs per over is a huge cushion. So yesterday's win, I'm not looking too much into it, because some things happen. Such things happen. Sometimes it happens like this, that the last over you see the onslaught. These 32 runs could have come in any of the other overs. But it's going to hurt Delhi Capitals even more, that at the end of the 19th over, they must have still thought, okay, even if we give 10 runs, 210 chaseable. But once you cross 225, 230, that means another one extra run per over at an average, it becomes difficult for you to chase, because it plays on your mind. It plays on your mind. That's why that changeover time makes hell of a lot of difference. And I think that is the time when DC lost the match. DC, it was very hard for DC to believe that they would actually do it. So they said, okay, let us see if we can get close. And they lost those 3 wickets in the last over. Otherwise, the margin would have been a little less. That's about it. But I had no doubt that MI was winning this game in the last 20 overs of the match. Absolutely no doubt. So MI has its problems, but for me, the win is not very convincing. If you take out that one over, there's nothing between DC and MI. But the point here is that MI still has a long way to go. They have to sort out their issues. Their batters are not doing so well. Of course, they had a good start. It was great to see Rohit among the runs. And of course, if Rohit bats for 60 deliveries or he gets 70, you can be sure that his strike rate is going to be massive. So they have the resources, but I don't think they have the balance in the team.
And also, this year has been an year where high totals, you know, the scores have shot up past 270 three or four times. Sir, I want to ask you, is it because of the aggressive pickups that they made in the auction, or is it, as I believe, the impact player rule that made the real impact here? Because, you know, we see players coming here, hitting and is going back. We have seen Abhishek Sharma, the way he played two nights ago. So, what is your take on no impact player rule, and or is it any other reason that you believe the totals are going far beyond 250 or something?
See, impact player rule is one of the reasons, yes, for teams really going berserk, and because you have the option, you have the luxury to play an extra batter, and it doesn't affect your bowling unit. So that's a huge reason. Because you can always pick that extra guy when you're chasing. You can always make that substitution, get that, substitute as an impact option. But the point here is also the way the team train these days, the way they go for the big hits. Of course, a lot of thinking goes into, your support. I mean, the support staff who are expected to give you the inputs. They are also working hard. The bowlers also try pretty hard. But look at the equipment, look at the way the mindset has changed. There was a time when, I'm just giving you an example of how things were when India won the World Cup in 83. If you had scored 240 runs in 60 overs, it was considered a match-winning total. And the average per over was 4 runs in over. Now, 240 in 60 overs, if in say 2024, if you look at 240 in 40 overs or 240 in 50 overs, it's no big deal. It's a no-brainer. People, you will back the team chasing to win this game. But the point here is times have changed. The way people think, if you say 25 runs in the last over, there will be people in the dugout, there'll be people in that packed hall. They will not be sure of which team is going to win. Now that is what modern day cricket has done to you. That the batters believe that it is possible to hit 6 out of 6. out of the park. Now, that is what you believe. It's not necessary that you almost get it. Like yesterday, we saw 32 runs in an over. How often do you see that? But trust me, as we go along, you'll see more and more teams scoring, you know, in, I mean, close to 27 to 35 runs. This is becoming real. Because
but every time it's a bowler who feels the pain.
Bowler, yeah, exactly. See, cricket is a batter's game that has been drilled into our brains ever since we learnt about this sport. It is a batsman's game. Okay, fine. Now, if it is so, you have made rules which will only see more runs because the general, you know, feeling is, or what you are told is, people don't want to see a low-scoring game. People want to see runs being scored. They are not there to watch 20 wickets fall. No, they are not interested. If you say a team scores 90 and the other team scores 90 for 9, they'll still be excited because they don't know which team is going to win. If the other team scores 91 for 4, you'll say, oh, what a boring match. We wasted our time. So the point here is you want to see more runs. So nobody complains when a team scores 270 and the opposition scores 230 plus. So you're seeing almost 500 runs in 40 overs. So it's about runs being scored. So when you say, you know, that a lot of, you know, we are seeing scores in excess of 200 quite consistently, it's bound to happen. Because, you know, if you see the impact of T20 cricket has, I mean, it has also helped ODI cricket. It has also helped, you know, when we talk about the longer version of the game, the red ball game. But we don't give it the due that it so richly deserves. It has to be given credit because it has changed your mindset. A lot of people believe that they own the arena. A lot of youngsters, which you see, even this year, you see people like Shashank, people like Abhishek, a lot of these names, they're not illustrious names. They haven't, I mean, they can't, I mean, their names don't carry a very heavyweight resume. But look at what they can do to reputations. It's because they believe that, look, I have practiced well, this is my arena. That's what I've always believed from day one, that homegrown batters or homegrown, you know, like bowlers, they will definitely do well in Indian, you know, I mean, in the IPL. Reason being, they played only that cricket on these surfaces. Now, once you convert that, it has, we have already had, say, since 2008 and all these editions, 16 editions, you see that we have, you know, produced players out of IPL. Although the selection committee will feel that, okay, it's not fair to just recognize the talent of a T20 player and that too from IPL and give him a break. But Indians have still done that, by the way. No matter how, which selector says that, no, first we put them in India A, he has to prove himself in India A and then go on to, I mean, you know, then he gets into the scheme of things for senior cricket. It doesn't happen that way consistently. There are a few examples which me and you know who have been picked straight from the IPL. There is one gentleman who has made his comeback, his test comeback through IPL. So these things do happen. But the point here is, coming back to why these runs are being scored, I think the cricketing skills, the skill sets are getting better and better. The first thing that white ball cricket did was to improve the fielding standards, the catching, the fielding. Now, you field in, I mean, you not only use your skills, but you are taught in practice that how two people can combine to save a boundary and relay the ball back to the wicketkeeper. That is being practiced. How you take a catch outside the ropes by still being airborne and you come back inside the playing arena, the field of play, to complete the catch. All these are practiced. There was a time when, I mean, nobody thought that this was possible. I mean, nobody practiced. These days you do practice. You can see players standing inside the ropes, taking, I mean, the ball is hit from close, just in a way for them to get used to that idea of hopping across the rope, being airborne, they push the ball back, and then they run in and they complete a simple looking catch. So a lot has changed. So if the run making has improved, the shot making has improved, so has the fielding, so has the bowling, because a lot of people try Yorkers. But the point here is, Yorkers, everybody knows that if you bowl right, it looks great. And when a batsman gets yorked, We give a lot of credit to the bowler for delivering that ball, but it is the batter who makes it look so spectacular. Either he'll fall, he'll slip, and he's trying
Russell.
Ishan Sharma. So many of them. Yesterday we saw, you know, Shaw. Shaw had the same issue. He almost tripped. He wanted to save his toes. But the point here is, what I'm trying to say, everybody is improving. So that's what you will see, that a lot of bowlers are getting sharper. Of course, you miss the length, you'll be hit. When you are trying to bowl wide yorkers, or people used to say, you know, a little slow yorkers at times, there's nothing like that. If a batter, he's got his eyes set, you can't bowl a yorker to him. He will read it and he can hit you. That's the reason why people attempting yorkers, I mean, of course, we would like to believe that Bumrah bowls the best of them in the world. That is because some of the batters make him look absolutely stunning. I mean, breathtaking. Because they are not able to put the bat down in time. And also, a lot of those guys who come to bat from, say, number 8 to 11, somehow they manage to put the bat down. They don't get yorked very easily, if you see. Because they're not sure of their skill set, so their bat doesn't go off the ground in a hurry. They don't have a backlift. So it's very difficult for you to get a wicket. That means getting a batter bowled. If he's not lifting his bat, the chances are that you're going to either get him LBW or the bat is going to come into play. So everybody is trying to improve, but yes, the runs are getting more and more. Previously, we used to say because of the shorter, you know, boundaries, we would see more sixes. Of course, that was designed. But let's talk about the skill sets here. I think batters, I mean, the way they improvise, you talk about 360 degree, you know, 360 degree hitting. People try to, you know, do so many things. Switch hits are allowed. Now, why don't you allow, I mean, this is again a very different subject, that why don't you allow a bowler to switch hands and bowl? But then he has to declare that he's going to bowl over the wicket, round the wicket, whether he's right arm or left arm. He has to declare so that the batter knows. But the bowler is not supposed to know whether the batter can opt for a switch hit. Because the field is set for a right-hander. The moment the ball is released, he can do anything. He can just switch sides and he can, you know, become a right-hander. A left-hander will become a right-hander. So every rule favors the batter here. So you can't change it because each team gets to bat for 20 overs. Each team has 11 players and each one of them has a bat in their hands. So when you're chasing down or when you are setting a target, the rules are the same for both teams.
Although, sir, I've come across a very interesting stat with concern, the Lucknow Super Giants. They have defended 13 out of 13 times when their score was 160 plus. Yeah. And they won 15 games out of 18 and lost only 2 games. Yeah. Batting first. So,
yes.
And if you look at their bowling, they're not so great bowlers. Most of them are Indians. This year, we are seeing Mayank Yadav, who played his third match. Yesterday, we saw Yash Thakur. Others, we have Ravi Bishnoi. But what is this? Is LSG's bowling so good? Or, no, what do you think helped them here? No,
I don't think their bowling on paper looks so good. You have to give credit to those, you know, for those names which you just took. They are not playing for India regularly. Nobody, I mean, they are all still aspirants to get that India cap. But the point is, when you look at, say, a Yash Dayal yesterday, let's look at him. I mean, let's just take an example and talk about it. See, the team's strategy, when you are looking at 160, you know it's gettable. It's a tricky total. In 2024, I'm saying. In 2008, when the IPL started, if you had put anything in excess of 260, it was considered, 160, it appeared to be a match-winning one, irrespective of the state of the wicket, irrespective of the due factor or whatever. But in 2024, if you restrict, if you keep a team in between, you know, between 160 and 170, the commentators will be the first to say, oh, this team has managed to restrict the opposition. Great. Now, you start chasing. Now, when you're chasing, if you are a little complacent, you had it. Yesterday, just imagine, after 5.5 overs, I think the score was 54 without loss. Okay? You are chasing down. So you needed another 110 runs to win from the remaining 14 overs. Of course, you lose a wicket at the last ball of the power play. No damage done. Thereafter, for the addition of 48 runs, you lose 8 wickets. How do you explain that? That is because a certain Yash comes to bowl. You think Krunal Pandya cannot be hit because he has taken those 3 wickets or whatever. So you go after Yash. Now, when you go after somebody in desperation, chances are that you're going to, you know, reward him with wickets. Not that you want to, but it often happens. This is how, you know, so often we have seen that Jasprit Bumrah is bowling brilliantly. Shami is bowling brilliantly. The opposition decides to give Shardul Thakur the charge. And Shardul gets a wicket. Not because Shardul has bowled a wicket-taking ball. He gets wickets off full tosses. He gets deliveries which are meant to be hit out of the park. Somehow the batter gets that kind of relief. He'll say, oh my God, here is Shardul. He's much, I mean, he can be tonked. I can't hit Shami. I can't hit, Jasprit Bumrah. But Shardul can be hit. He'll give me the right length to swing my bat. He'll give me the right width. I mean, you know, the right width to cut the ball, pull the ball. So the moment the batter loses that, just that amount of concentration, he becomes vulnerable. So yesterday, what you saw with Yash was just that. Yash didn't bowl amazingly well. But then that's white ball cricket for you. You don't have to necessarily bowl a wicket-taking ball to get a wicket. So yesterday, when I was watching it, I was just seeing how, I mean, they were throwing caution to the winds, and they were just going after that bowler. He's young, he can be hit, and you ended up giving him wickets. All credit to that youngster for doing what he did. I mean, he just played along and he said, okay, so you want to hit me? Please hit me. And of course, the catches were taken. He bowled well. He really bowled well. So give credit to LSD there for creating a situation for no wickets on the board with 56 already there. They were not defending a huge total. But again, you know, how did GT, just chase their, how did they plan their chase? I don't think, more than LSG doing their job, I think it was almost like, GT helping LSG finish the job. Otherwise, how can you just keep losing wickets like that? You have a Ravi Bishnoi, can't you bring him up there? And, you know, he came pretty, he was there at the other end, didn't get strike at the initial this thing. Then, of course, he hit those few sixes. Otherwise, the team would have folded inside 110. They got that additional 20-25 runs in the end. For the last 2 wickets. But the point here is that it was too little too late. You can't really, look at 165 and of course the stats are very impressive. No question about it. You know, if you can win 15 out of 18 by defending and here we are talking about a batter's game and the bowlers are doing the job. So a lot of credit should be given to LSG. But at the same time, for me, why they succeed so consistently is, I'd rather use the word consistency here, because they are so consistent. 15 bar 18 is a huge percentage. And for them to do it, a lot of credit is due to the captain. But at the same time, I think it is not something which is due to the fact that they have a terrific bowling attack. No, they don't have. They have just a very average attack. They can be tonked all over the park on any given day. It is just that the batters, if they don't apply, then you'll see what you saw last night.
And the sensational Mayank Yadav, who has made his debut this year, won the first 2 matches, yeah, and is clocking every now and then 155, 150. And even Steve Smith is waiting for him in the Border Gavaskar Trophy. So, yeah. And there is a requirement for the management to look after his fitness, workload management and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But how do you see, does he go back the way how Umran Malik came? He bowled he got an Indian cap and then he was so expensive, he went back. And then here is Mayank Yadav. In comparison,
see, Chingu,
with
for me, speed is not something that excites me, so much. A lot of people get excited by speed.
Speed with accuracy.
Yeah, something. Speed with accuracy is what we should look for. Just sheer speed, because the speed gun doesn't reflect on the accuracy of the ball bowled and the field to which the bowler is bowling. So Umran got hit like that, and I've seen faster guys like, you know, Shoaib and all being treated like school kids when, you know, by people like Sachin and Sehwag. Now I'm just trying to you know, just connect it to that 2003 World Cup final. Maybe I'm sorry, that World Cup clash between India and Pakistan, where we scored 50 in less than 5 overs, and the attack included names like, you know, Shoaib and Wasim and Waqar. So speed and craft, these two have to go hand in hand. Now, talking about this youngster, of course, it's too young to talk about this guy developing his craft. It'll take time, but it's great to see that somebody of his frame and his build is releasing the ball, and, you know, you are seeing something like 150. You see, speed has always thrilled people in this world, be it a 100-meter sprint, be it the fastest car, the fastest automobile, so to speak, the fastest bike, and so on and so forth. So speed has thrilled human senses like no other. So you try to, you know, measure all the speed. You look at certain animals and you see, oh my God, that's the fastest animal in the world and on this planet, and so on and so forth. So speed by itself thrills, that is okay. But when you look at it in the context of a bowler bowling at 150, 160. Now, somebody like Shoaib has clocked something like 161. That is his recorded speed. Now, 161 is seriously fast, okay? But for him to be effective, do you call Shoaib, despite the longevity or the lack of it of Shoaib's career, do you call him one of the greatest of all times? No. You certainly don't do that. You'll rather talk about people like, people like Holding. Well, not quick, but he was almost unplayable on his day. And not because of speed, because of the craft which he had. So a lot of faster bowlers like Imran and all, they've cut down their pace in, you know, like later years. Not because they couldn't bowl that. They wanted to stretch their careers as well. So speed at his age is great. Now imagine the same boy who was playing for Sonnet here. Delhi hasn't given him the kind of opportunities that he needs. I've seen him in domestic cricket though, but nobody bothers about speed in domestic games so much because it's not getting recorded. It is not being seen as such. So the problem is, no, he was there all right. He was another kid at the Nets. Everything was fine, but suddenly he gets the big stage and he gets those wickets up front. Now that is what has come to actually showcase Mayank. The world is now looking at him. Oh my God, here is a guy who bowls in excess of 150 so regularly. Great. But again, workload management, you talk about a lot of things. Of course, injuries can happen. But then let's just hail this natural talent as of now. You know, it's too young to go into the fact that whether he's going to get into the Indian team. We have already gone through this once. Umrah was there, you know, we did speak on the same lines for him. Oh my God, he's so quick, he's so good, he's this. Of course, he looked impressive. But if you don't bowl to your field, if you can't maintain your length, if you can't, you know, think like a bowler who is getting that batsman out, you can't just aim for the stumps all the time. Yes, if you can do that, consistently hit the stumps or bowl in the line of the stumps, you are likely to get more wickets. But then if you're bowling on the pads, if you're giving the width, if you're struggling with your rhythm, then your speed is seriously counterproductive to your team and to the interests of your team, because you'll end up releasing the pressure from one end completely. You'll get tonked for 15, 16 runs. Then the bowler doesn't know whether to bring you on immediately for the next over or to hold you back. And then as and when you come, people are waiting that, okay, this guy is struggling with his rhythm. He's not sure. He lacks confidence. That is where you get hit even more. So far, things have gone Mayank's way. May God be with him, the wonderful child. Let him just, you know, concentrate on bowling, not on taking wickets. He just has to get the basics right. And once he gets the basics right, consistently, of course, he'll get hit. Don't expect him not to concede runs. There'll also be times when he's going to go wicketless. All these things will happen. But let's keep an eye on him. Let's see how he progresses. He still has to evolve as a serious bowler. But he has shown the spark. We have got somebody of that speed. Let's just, you know, nurture him. Let's just nurse him into something that serves India in the long run.
Everything you said was totally relatable, sir, because I am also a fast bowler.
Great, Chiru. You
So
are a
we'll move on
fast
to
bowler,
the.
and have you ever bowled with a speed gun?
No.
There you are. That means we don't know. We can't be too sure if we have missed a fast bowler. The nation has missed a fast
Oh,
bowler. Who knows?
that's too much compliments.
No, seriously, because we don't know, so we can't be too sure.
Yes. So we'll move on and talk about, an excited guy. All Indians are excited for this guy who made his comeback after his car accident. And when Delhi Capitals played their first game, we were at hostel, we were writing our board exams. I remember the television was put on in the dining hall, and then the match went on, and I see my juniors, my classmates, everyone shouting when Rishabh Pant comes for batting. And when he went, even the opposition team, the fans of opposition team, they cheered for this lad, and he even got runs in this tournament. 250s already, he's striking at 150. Will he make a comeback to the T20 World Cup, sir? Do you see him anywhere near?
Trust me, in the remaining league matches, if he crosses 50 two more, just two more times, okay? You have 14 league matches. If he crosses 50 two more times, I think you have to write his name right up there and say, okay, he's going. He's going to be part of the World Cup squad. The reason being, why I'm so sure is because the team management, the way they think, or the selectors, or the board, the way they think is once he gets in to the team, I mean, I just hope that he doesn't get injured or he doesn't have any fitness issues. Number one, he brings a certain balance to the team. So you get rid of a reluctant KL Rahul as a wicketkeeper. I called even Dave, Rahul, Ra I mean, Rahul, the other Rahul who is now the coach. When Rahul Dravid was made to keep the wickets, he was one of the most reluctant wicketkeepers that I have seen in an Indian team because he was not a regular keeper. His hands would get swollen when he would keep wickets to the likes of Srinath and Venkatesh Prasad. You couldn't shake hands with him after the game because his hands would still be swollen. So, because no matter what you wear, I mean, if your hands are not used to the ball pounding your gloves at a certain speed, you are going to feel it. And then you have to bat for 50 overs. So that was tough on Rahul, the other Rahul, and even this Rahul. No matter how comfortable he looks sometimes, but then given a choice, he wouldn't keep wickets. So if you have a full-time keeper, he brings in that variety. Because I mean, I'm sorry, he brings in that kind of a stability in the middle. You have a guy who can talk the ball at anything between 150 and 200. It'll be a strike rate. So you want him to be there. And then of course the emotional reason. The kind of emotions which you saw on his return, and this was bound to happen. For me, one of the most important factors was not that whether he was going to score runs in this IPL. Even if out of 14 league matches, if he had played, say, something like 5 to 10, and the management wasn't sure of his fitness, and they were giving him matches very cautiously and trying to gauge whether he can be, a serious part of the mix. But just look at the way he has come back. I mean, it's not easy because what he saw, that's what I was talking to a psychologist when he had this accident. And he was still recovering. He was in a bad shape at that time. So the psychologist, she told me that, I mean, like these are still early days, but we have to be very careful because he was involved in an accident that involved speed. Okay. And he plays a spot where the ball comes to him at a certain speed, whether he's batting or he's keeping. So if he anything that has scarred his, mind or his brain, or it has left some kind of a image of speed, I mean, that can be disastrous for a wicketkeeper. He'll never be able to keep again. Now, this was a kind of an apprehension expressed by a psychologist. But I'm so happy that the kind of people who have worked with him right through his rehab, they have done a fantastic job. And this youngster has responded so wonderfully well. And I've always loved his spirit. He reminded me of Sehwag the moment, I mean, the first time when I spoke to him. his responses were quite similar to what Viru would say in like during his heydays or even during the days when he was trying to make it to the Indian team. And Rishabh was no different. He sounded pretty much similar. And the spirit, I think more than anything else, it's not what he says. It is the kind of spirit that he personifies, or the kind of, I mean, he has epitomized certain things, certain factors, certain features and certain qualities. I think that is what makes Rishabh so lovable. And he doesn't get, influenced or impacted by reputations of the bowler or the opposition. And that is why he brings in a certain kind of, a spirit or a feel-good feeling among his teammates also, because he's not the one to be sitting in a corner, brooding over something that didn't go his way. He'll retain that smile. So it is not just a wicketkeeper in the team. Rishabh is more than that. And in the current context, especially where on one hand we say that we have in excess of 35 first-class teams, that means each team has at least one specialist wicketkeeper. But when it comes to picking a wicketkeeper for the Indian team, be it red ball or white ball, we look for a makeshift wicketkeeper. We don't go for a specialist wicketkeeper. The reason is the same all these years in the era before that of Dhoni and after the MS Dhoni era again. That is, we have to maintain the balance of the team. That's why you have to ask a batter to keep a wicket. I mean, to just keep wickets. And that is exactly what Rishabh will just walk in and he'll change that, and we'll go back to that time, say, before the accident happened. Indian had at least one wicketkeeper in this country where you have more than 35, first-class teams. But we can't get a second wicketkeeper. We can have a Jurel, we can have so many, but we are still reluctant to have a specialist wicketkeeper in the scheme of things. But we'd rather go with a batter who has only revealed that, look, I used to keep wickets as an under-19 player or as in my college or something. Rahul and KL Rahul, both. I'm talking about Rahul Dravid and KL Rahul. They've never kept wickets for their states, but then they kept wickets for the country. And in this country, again, as I said, more than 35 teams, every team has two openers. But when it comes to white ball cricket, we have had some of the greatest Indian players, greatest Indian openers who never opened for their states. Be it Sachin Tendulkar, Saurav Ganguly, Rahul Dravid, Virendra Sehwag, no one opened for India. But when it came to white ball cricket, colored clothing, you always saw them as openers. And if you had a match involving Delhi or Bombay, these batters will not open the innings for their state. So that's what I'm saying. Ours is a country of contradictions. So when you look at somebody like Rishabh Pant, we want Rishabh for more than one reason. Of course, he's quality, no doubt about it. But he hasn't played that much of international cricket. And IPL is just what the doctor ordered for him to make a comeback. Because he'll get into the mix, he'll feel good about himself, he'll work harder, and he knows that, age is on his side. Of course, he still has to do a bit to get into the team. As I said, if you give him two more 50s and if he doesn't have any fitness issues, I see him on that flight for the World
Cup. We'll wrap this episode now. Thank you, sir, for coming, and thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with House Full, hopefully. Please do follow Legends and Lads Cricket Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this podcast on. Signing off. Bye-bye.